podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Tony Review system, Diogo. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
If he kicks this, he can shave whichever part of his body he wants.
Welcome to the Attacking Scrum podcast. Difficult to know where to begin with this one, so I'm going to start just by introducing my guest. Good evening, Steph. How are you?
Yeah, well, yeah, all right. How are you?
Yeah, definitely had more fun days to be a fan of Welsh rugby. This does not feel like one of the best. I wanted to start with this one, actually, because there's lots flying around on social media about just where this ranks in terms of embarrassing defeats for Welsh rugby. This, to me, I would say, is definitely the most embarrassing of the professional era, arguably the most embarrassing full stop.
Yeah, it was like a throwback to the early 1990s, late 80s, wasn't it? You know, like when they lost to Romania in 88, you know, losing to Western Samoa in 91, you know, losing to Cairns on their own patch, you know, losing to, you know, I don't mean this offensively, but losing to teams that they shouldn't lose to. Minnows, you know, teams who haven't got the same sort of level of infrastructure, same level of funding, same quality of players, just losing to teams on paper, which they shouldn't logically lose to. It was absolutely abysmal. There was no excuse for it. To answer your question, I think it definitely is the worst of the professional era.
Yeah.
Somebody did flag up they lost by, you know, the record score lost by, I think it was 96-13 in Loftus-Versfeld in 1998. However, that was a third string Welsh team and they were up against a great box team. But, you know, apart from one or two players, this is Wales' strongest team. And they, quite frankly, they were awful. You know, you've got to give Georgia credit. They fought till the bitter end. But the worst thing about this is they were no great shakes either. At least when they lost to Italy in the Six Nations, they lost against a team who were innovative behind the scrum, who had some firepower, and it was a moment of brilliance. They won the game. But, you know, again, credit to Georgia. You know, the scrums at the end, you know, were tremendous, great character, but this was all about how bad Wales were, and they gifted the result to Georgia on a plate. The skill levels of the players weren't professional standard. I don't know what the game plan is. I don't know what they're trying to do on attack. you know, Wayne Pivock was appointed partly because, not just because he's had success with the Scarlets, but because of the style of play, their attacking game. You know, because the one criticism of the Gatland era was that they weren't the most threatening in attack. They didn't win games that way. And Pivock and Stephen Jones come in, were supposed to herald a new dawn where they wouldn't rip up the playbook, but they just build on what Gatland brought. And the attack now is worse than it was in the Gatland era. Obviously, a lot of players have moved on, and you could argue that they are better players to work with. But I just don't know what they're trying to do. And you know, Pivock played the card that the regional game is struggling, and that's a valid point, and we'll get to that later. But I think, you know, to lose to Italy at home and to Georgia at home in the space of a year, less than a year. I know they won in South Africa. Credit there. But on the whole, there's been some appalling performances, and I think enough's enough. And I think the Welsh Rugby Union have got to act now.
Well, that's right. I mean, as you can imagine, we've had quite a lot of questions and correspondence in with regards to this. Simon Wilding's asked this question. Howell has asked this question. Who else? Quite a few that simply says, Andy John is another. He has to go now, right? And we were here just, what, a couple of weeks ago after the All Blacks performance, which at the time felt like a poor one. Nothing in comparison to this. But we were saying that there's no chance of him going for financial reasons. How do you assess it now, Steph, 2 weeks later with a, you know, with a landmark defeat?
I think landmark is a, you know, a valid term, isn't it? I mean, there was something about yesterday's result. I mean, realistically, if we're being brutally honest, he should have gone after Italy. I don't know how that can be deemed acceptable, losing a home to Italy. But to lose to Georgia, who, and I don't mean it, no disrespect, you know, I think that there's potential in Georgian rugby and I want to see them progress. And if they had the right back, and they would. But, you know, before the game, you know, I was saying that historically when Wales have struggled against tier two nations, when they've lost or when they've scraped through, it's been because Warren Gatland in the main has made wholesale changes, and he's almost have to because he needs to see the depth of his squad. And it's purely been because of that, because the tier two nations have sort of, you know, they fed off that. But Pivac, I thought, got it right in his selection, which is worrying, really, isn't it? You know, he tinkered with the squad, he didn't make wholesale changes. That was a strong Welsh team that should have won 40, 50 points on paper. I don't think I'm being disrespectful saying that, but they just look rudderless. They started the first half reasonably well. They were comfortable at half-time. If Josh Adams had scored, rightly disallowed, they probably would have won well, but they just, you know, they just didn't know where to turn after that. They couldn't take advantage of, you know, the heavy legs and the Georgian defence. They just didn't know what to do. And I just think, yeah, there are financial considerations. He's in contract until after the Rugby World Cup. But, you know, in many ways, you're losing more money if you carry on with this. I just think a strong chief executive, a strong WU board would act now. And I think they need to show some leadership, and I think they need to have some tough conversations with certain individuals.
Yeah, absolutely agree. A couple of quick points on that. I think Greg Sherrington pointed out to us on Twitter there were eight Lions in that 23, which I haven't checked, but sounds about right. As you said there, more than enough quality to get past a tier two nation. And then the other point, you know, I've been kind of watching this, or, you know, mulling it over my head after watching the game, in part as a fan, you know, beyond disappointed, as we all are, but then the other part, trying to look at it with a commercial hat on. And the thing to me, Steph, like you've said there, is this going to cost you more commercially, not just in the long term, but in the short term? How the hell are you going to sell tickets for those World Cup warm-up games next year, for example, right? Which we know can be a tough gig at the best of times. Who in their right mind is going to buy a ticket and go, oh, do you know what, I fancy this? Unless you were to turn around the most miraculous of performances in the Six Nations, there is, and obviously there's been nothing to indicate that that's going to be the case. How do you do it? So again, we know that those games are not just important in terms of the preparation for the World Cup and trying out some selection and getting players up to match fitness. They're important from a commercial sense because it's another opportunity to get fans through the gate. So I think you might well be onto something when you say long, you know, long and medium term. There's a real opportunity. This might cost Wales more if they don't act.
I think you're right. So one thing I will say, I mean, you know, it's not out of the realms of possibility that Wales will beat Australia next week, because you'd imagine the players are going to be really pissed off. There'll be a reaction, and Australia, you know, they've deserved better results than they've got this autumn.
Yeah.
However, you know, they're pretty burnt out by the looks of it. They got several key players are injured, so they could scrape a result. And you know, that old paper over cracks. Look, Wayne Pivac did a fantastic job at the Scarlet. You know, I understand why he was appointed, but I think there's a lot of things at play here. I mean, as I said, he was brought in to build on what Gatland did rather than rip it up, just add that attack and edge. He tried that. I think he quickly realised that doesn't work at test level. They were almost like a super rugby team playing international rugby, which definitely doesn't work. Then he reverted to Warren Ball, if you want to use that term. You know, that brought a few results. Obviously, great result in South Africa, historic one in the summer, credit there. But they've just... They're sort of caught between that style of wanting to play, you know, expansively and wanting to play pragmatic. I'm not really sure what they're trying to achieve. That's half the problem. You know, Stephen Jones, again, did a great job at the Scarlets, but he's got to answer questions as well because that attack is just not functioning whatsoever. No idea what they're trying to do. And, you know, but there's a lot of things at play here. You know, sacking Wayne Pivac doesn't solve all the issues either. It's, you know, he's a good bloke and he doesn't deserve this in many ways. You know, he's a capable coach as well because you just speak to players who've been coached by him and he has that success. But sometimes things just don't work and this isn't working. And I think they need to make a decision. But my worry is as well is, like, I know I keep harping on about this and it might get a bit boring, but it's really important. But sacking Wayne Pivac, like, I saw a really ignorant tweet earlier. It was ridiculous. Somebody saying, oh, you know, Wayne Pivac has destroyed Welsh rugby single-handedly. Well, look, a load of fucking bollocks. You know, excuse my French. Yes, you know, it's a big problem. He's got a lot of things wrong and he probably should be replaced. It's because it's just not working. However, getting a new coach in is not going to solve, even if it's a Scott Robertson, is it going to solve all of Welsh rugby's problems? It's going to help, certainly. But we have not got the same caliber of player coming through as we had 5 or 6 years ago. Mm. People forget Warren Gatland had the best players Wales have had since the 1970s. He had, more importantly, had more depth than any other Welsh coach. He did a great job. He's a world-class coach. I'm not diminishing what he achieved. But you've got to put that into consideration. He hasn't got the depth that Gatland had, the players that Gatland had. You know, when's the last good Wales in the 20s team?
When, you 2016, know, I think is, yeah, the most, you know. Yeah, and that's a long time ago.
Not good enough. And it's not just that. You know, you look at the professional game, the regional game. Loads of us have been saying this when Wales were winning Grand Slams. You know, Roger Lewis took a top-heavy approach. You know, the professional game, the regional game, was starved, absolutely starved. Because when we originally went to four teams, it was successful for a while. We had success. The Ospreys had success. Cardiff had success. Scarlets had the odd season. They had some really good top-end overseas players. And, you know, the academies are working well and he really created an environment where players could go on and play test rugby. But those players carried Wales for a very long time and then it just, you know, there was a lack of investment. It was neglected. It got worse and worse and worse. You know, what the hell is the Welsh Premiership for? I mean, can anyone answer to me what the purpose of the Welsh Premiership is? It should be arguably the most important, you know, part of the development pathway. Is it top of the community game? Is it part of the professional pathway? You know, there's all these questions. It all feeds into it. There was a top-heavy approach. Gatland papered over cracks. Credit to him. Massive credit. But it was top-heavy, you know, short-termist, cutting debt faster than it needed to on the stadium. And the whole thing has crashed and fucking burned. And we're in a really bad position now. And I don't think it's overly dramatic. Even if we scrape a win next week against a depleted Wallabies outfit, that we're in a bad place and we're going downhill at the rate of bloody knots. And, you know, I don't want to swear, but we are in a really bad place at the moment. And I just think that there's got to be some strong leadership. Yes, replacing Wayne Pivac and going after a Scott Robertson or a Ron Nogara, even a Gatland on an interim basis, you know. Yes, that's part of the solution, but it's not the whole solution. They need a long-term funding deal, a long-term deal for the professional game to begin with, so the regional games can go strong, the regional teams can get stronger, and then there's a better standard of rugby for players to develop in and go on to the national side. They need to cut the amount of teams in the Welsh Premiership. I don't care if certain clubs are upset. You know, they need to get in line. I think that needs to, there needs to be strong leadership there because it's been very weak. And I think, you know, they need to look at the grassroots level where you know, it's so many people are turning towards football. You know, where I come from, the Amman Valley, you know, you've got places like the Gwendraith Valley next door, you know, rugby hotbeds. Mm. You know, Carwin James came from the Gwendraith Valley, Barry John came from there, you know, and you've got teams who can't, famous clubs can't field teams certain weekends and games are called off. You know, the double A, you've got to look at that. It all feeds up, and I just feel, you know, it does go back to that split in the professional game and the amateur game. This isn't something that's that's sort of difficult to understand. It's nothing revolutionary. It's common bloody sense. It is common sense. It has to happen, and I just think that the double A, you need to show leadership here because we're at a very critical point, and you know, I really hope the Welsh football team do really well in Qatar. I want Wales to succeed at anything. But if you think that that's not, if you think that the success of Welsh football isn't a threat to Welsh rugby, that's a very naive point of view. So I think that, you know, there's got to be leadership shown, and I think Steve Phillips needs to get together with the Welsh Rugby Union board, and they need to, you know, make some very difficult and painful decisions because we're in a really dangerous position.
Yeah, and the most depressing thing about that, Steph, is how many times have we mentioned that this season alone? You know, I think you maybe on 5 or 6 times this season, and I think we have mentioned these things every single time you've been on, and that's, you know, that predates any of this. You know, this, the Georgia thing is one part of it. It's another embarrassing result for the national side, but it's because, or in part because, it is built on foundations of paper. You know, as you said, it's a top heavy structure, and when you're able to pull off results with the national side, that is able to divert attention. All of these things have been there throughout Warren Gatland's time, and the results of the national side will always be a distraction because it's the most high profile. All of these problems are there, and they are now impacting very, very heavily on the national side.
I think
that's not to say Wayne Pivak, shouldn't be replaced, as you said, but that is one part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, as you said, obviously the people, I imagine a lot of people who listen to this podcast are diehard rugby fans who, you know, don't just watch a few games a season.
There's not a lot in it for you otherwise, is there?
if you see what I mean. But a lot of people, and I'm not knocking these people, and there's nothing wrong with it. You know, a lot of people just want to turn up and watch Wales and have a good day out and just want Wales to do well. There's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. So those people obviously don't want to listen to everything else. You know, what I've just said is pretty dry and pretty boring to most people, and I understand that. And there's nothing wrong with that. But when Wales were winning under Gatland, they don't want to hear anything else, do they? You know, they probably got better things to spend their time and money on. But, you know, now we've been thinking, for years, that the only way things will get sorted out, people will take notice, is when the national team crashes and burns, and we're at that stage. So the punters who only turn up to watch Wales, they're going to start asking deeper questions. I mean, obviously the worrying thing is, it, you know, obviously they probably lose interest in rugby altogether and watch other sports. But I think, you know, we're at a stage now that, obviously, it was actually a fantastic crowd yesterday against Georgia on Saturday. I think it was a 63,000-odd, which is actually a fantastic crowd. But obviously, tickets cheaper for the Georgian game. But as you said rightly earlier, would you pay a lot of money to watch Wales in those World Cup warm-ups? Probably not. You know, less and less people would be interested, and we're at that stage now where it's just going to hurt the bottom line, isn't it? Which is money. So I just think that, you know, they got to act, and they got to take, it's got to be a root and branch review, really. Yeah.
The other thing there, Steph, is, you know, again, looking at it with, like, I guess my work hat on, with a bit of a marketing head on, is you've mentioned there that a lot of people turn up to the stadium and, you know, have generally only had interest in the Welsh national side. Well, you know, okay, fine. We've had that, you know, that period of success for 10 or 12 years, whatever it is. That was a golden opportunity to get people to spend more time with Welsh rugby, right? You know, that should be a gateway. If you're going to two, three, maybe even just one Wales game a season, you want them to be interested in your clubs, right? You want them to be interested in going to watch Cardiff or the Dragons or whatever, right? You want them to walk away from that stadium going, that was brilliant. How do I get my next fix of Welsh rugby? And I know we see that debate on Twitter all the time. Oh, you only go to, you know, there's club rugby every week of the every weekend of the year. Why aren't people going to that? It's like, well, do you know what? It's in part our job to give people a reason to go to that. And I'm not demeaning any of the diehards who spend their time with community clubs. They are the absolute lifeblood of the community game. Likewise, the, you know, the 5,000 or 6,000 who go and watch the regional sides every weekend. That's brilliant. But the fact of the matter is that in a day where you're, you know, in a day and age where you're surrounded by entertainment, there is not enough entertainment within those within that regional rugby, within the competition they're in, within the calibre of rugby they're playing, to get people interested. And there hasn't been for a long time. So it was a massive opportunity while Wales were good to get people in and interested in that part of the game. And that would have built for a much more successful and sustainable financial model than where we find ourselves now.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think there's a few things to that. A lot of it isn't Welsh rugby's fault, really. You know, the lack of a global calendar.
Yeah.
You know, international rugby clashes with club rugby. And that just, you know, when you're playing, when you've only got four professional teams, as opposed to, you know, you 12, 13 in England and then, you know, France where they got a 24, you know, obviously it's going to impact it a lot more. Of course, and obviously there's more depth and more money being spent on Irish rugby, bigger population. So Welsh rugby's been hit harder there. So that's part of it. And then obviously you've got this whole thing because of the NS, the National Squad 38, where the Union pay 20%. Sorry, the Union pay 80% and the professional clubs pay 20%, albeit that's their money anyway, because it's compensation for services of their players. But obviously there's that whole thing where it gets sold to the international rugby's first. So on that basis, why should you turn up and spend money at watching regional rugby? You know, that's actually not the region's fault. It's just the way Welsh rugby's set up. But one thing I will say, I thought it was an absolutely fantastic article in interview in the Telegraph with Tom Tainton.
This was Charlie Morgan's article in the week, wasn't it? The Bristol Bears CEO.
Yeah, so he was the head of comms. Actually, you know, he's not anymore. He was. He's gone up now. So he's really switched on, smart guy. He thinks outside the box. Obviously, I don't know him well, but dealt with him when I was covering Bristol in the Premiership. And some of the stuff he was thinking, just he was saying, was just so spot on. You know, we're just stuck in our ways in rugby, and it's so boring, isn't it? You know, like, it's very difficult these days to get interviews, one-to-one interviews and stuff from the Welsh regions, for example. It's just, you need to be building up your product. You want a bit of spice in the lead up to a match. You know, coaches, you know, I understand why, you know, but they're interviewing and they play everything safe and stuff. You want a bit of spice. You know, in France, there's a backstory to every game. You know, one coach says that this coach is an idiot, that player, you know, is dirty, he's done this, he's done that. And it's good. It keeps people interested. But everything's so dry in Welsh rugby. It's just so boring, isn't it? You know, and obviously I work in Welsh rugby, so I've got no choice, but I'm emotionally attached to it because it's part of my DNA and I was brought up watching it when club rugby was interesting in Wales. But if I was a kid now, I wouldn't give it a time of day.
No.
I wouldn't, would you?
No. I think, again, Steph, yeah, you know, it's a similar thing, right? There's a reason why, you know, I brought up in England, but I care about Welsh rugby. It was because my dad dragged me to watch Newport, you know, several times a year. And they were garbage at the time, but it meant something, right? You know, a skanky win over Cardiff when you were, you know, when you were down the bottom end of the league felt like a cup final, you know, and those are the those are the things that, that make it important. There has to be a reason. And like you say, how many times I've said this on this podcast, meaningful rugby, right? There is too much played. You strip it back and have much more games with much higher intensity, much bigger profile and much more meaning to them. And we're never going to get that with the league that we're in, that the Welsh sides find themselves in now.
But it's not just that. It's not, obviously on the field is most important, but it's off the field as well.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good stories, backstories with a lot of these Welsh players at regional level. What, you know, and everything's so media trained, you know, it's everything's so safe. You know, they need to be promoted in their clubs. There needs to be spice. You know, that somebody needs to come out and say he's a fucking twat in that team just to get interest going. You know, maybe not as explicitly as that, obviously, but there needs to be that. There's just no, there's nothing to get people entertained, to get people attached to it. Things need to change. We need to think differently. We almost need to think like the Americans think in the NFL. You know, that's the sort of thing that Tom Tainton was saying in his interview. We just, it's the match day experience as well. It needs to be better. It just doesn't inspire. It doesn't capture the imagination. You know, we need to use players better. You know, players, marketable players like George North, like
Lewis Rees-Sammet.
Yeah, well, he obviously plays in England.
Oh, right.
You see the point I'm trying to make. You know, your young players come through like Sam Costello, Joe Hawkins. You know, he's at Exeter, but Dave Jenkins. You know, stuff like that. We need to find a way to engage with the community, and that's not purely just going out there and taking training sessions with pro players, taking training sessions with kids and stuff. Things just need to be spiced up. There needs to be a narrative about stuff, and you know, it's just. Rugby has this tradition, you know. We think like amateurs because rugby was an amateur sport. Rugby got professional. Sorry, not that's not the right term. But rugby got popular and captured the imagination as an amateur sport. But it's no longer amateurs, professional. And the only country in the world that's got it right is France. And look at the backstories there. Look at the stuff for like Stade Francais back in the day. What Boulajal was like in the press and stuff. We need characters like that. We used to have them in Welsh rugby, but we've still got them in Welsh rugby, but they're just hidden away all the time. You know, it's just stuff like that off the field. It just needs to be better. But obviously the most important thing is on the field, and until the professional clubs and the Welsh rugby union come together and, get a long-term plan, whether it can be successful with relevant funding, then just forget about it. But I just think the attitude in Welsh rugby, the culture in Welsh rugby, not just the Welsh Rugby Union, but the regions, everything, just it's not right. You know, they've assumed for a number of years, you know, I get this attitude all the time. You know, Welsh rugby is always going to be big because it's got a cultural significance, because we did this in the 70s, we did this and that, and Gatlin won a few Grand Slams. It's always going to be important, but that's why we're in this situation.
That ship has sailed, right?
It's bullshit. And you look at Noel Mooney, the FAW chief executive, what a phenomenal job he's doing. You know, absolute phenomenal job, and just his attitude, always thinking outside the box. Like, why have the WIU still got the three feathers? Why aren't they on the conversation about that? Look how the FAW have engaged young supporters in Wales, young people in Wales. You know, and I look at the regions as well, right? A few of them have posted, photos of, the supporters' evenings, you know, when they meet the coaches and CEOs and stuff. And this isn't a dig, great fans. But you see these photos, and most of them are over the age of 60. You know, where are the kids? You know, supporting Swansea City, Cardiff City, Welsh national football team. You know, and the FAW have just listened to what people want in terms of branding, in terms of fan engagement, and that's just lacking everywhere in Welsh rugby, and it's just unacceptable. It really is.
Wholeheartedly agree. Right, we're going to take a very quick break, Steph, and when we come back, we're going to have a look at some of the other on-the-field issues as the fallout of the Wales defeat to Georgia continues. And we're also going to take some more listeners' questions and see what answers we may have to some of them. So all of that is coming up after this very quick break. Welcome to the second half. Got through absolutely tons there, Steph. We're going to move our attention back to on-the-field matters now. This is quite an interesting one because, again, we've definitely touched upon this in other podcasts. This one is from Tudor Parry. It says, as an out-and-out seven, if Tipperick wasn't our captain, would he make it into the side considering Tommy Reffel and Jack Morgan? Is it time to play an out-and-out six? I mean, obviously, there are bigger things here, but we have mentioned squad selection throughout this autumn campaign. What do you make of that one?
I think he would get in. I just think he's a tremendous rugby player. I think he knows what his weaknesses are, but because he's so good all round as a player, I think he hides those. You know, what he brings as a whole is just phenomenal. His line out ability, he's got a unique skill set. Apparently, I deserve ritual slaughter for this comment, according to one Irish fan who clearly has problems, but so I deserve to be murdered for this next statement. But he has got a unique skill set that very few forwards in the UK and Ireland have got in terms of ball handling ability. And
I just wholeheartedly agree.
Yeah, but I deserve to be murdered for this. So apparently, but there we are. So he has got that. You know, he's got the X factor. I think his defensive play is world class. Just his stats after every game is always up there. I don't think he's world class at the break in terms of jackling or winning turnovers, but everywhere else is good. So I think he would keep his place. However, obviously he isn't getting on, and you know, there does come a time where you've got to move on, but I don't think we're at that stage with Tipperick yet. To answer his second question, totally agree. I think we do need a proper six, unless something's going on behind the scenes, and I'm not suggesting it has. I really don't know why Ross Moriarty isn't in the squad. He has his limitations, but he just brings so much physicality. He carries, you know, he's got a huge carry, but he carries to an extent. When he hits you, you know, you feel it. He goes through a lot of work, and he's the sort of guy who does a dirty work and allows players like Tipperick to do well. So I am baffled by that. You know, Aaron Wainwright's gone off the boil a bit, but he still covers six and eight. And, you know, we haven't got it. The whole thing, idea that Tipperick could play number eight at international level is just ludicrous, isn't it? So there's a lot of, you know, Thomas Young has been outstanding. I think he should have been in the squad. I don't know why he's ditched James Botham either. But Moriarty's the one for me. I totally agree. I think, you know, you playing a sort of, you know, the traditional Cooper style thing, you know, Pocock Cooper does work sometimes, but I just feel on the whole there's a reason why blindside and openside flank are different positions, and you know, they cross over a lot, but I just think that I like a back row with that balance. You go back to when you had Lydiate, Warburton and Farlatow. You could say that's Wales' greatest ever back row, just because, not because of the best players, because of the balance, and this back row is woefully balanced. I mean, Josh McLeod's not a number eight to test level, is he? I know.
I thought he gave an excellent shift yesterday.
Yeah,
but it's a baffling selection. You know, it really is.
So yeah, I would agree that we need a proper blindside. I'd like to see Moriarty back for Six Nations if he's fit.
Yeah, I mean, like I said to you the other week, obviously Lydiate's injured right now, but it just feels like right now that whole balance in the back row thing, although it's a cliche, is very much a huge part of the game. You know, the breakdown is so crucial to what's going on. You need, and that applies to all players across the pitch, you know, you need players who are able to impact it, but especially in the back row, you need that real mix. And I think you're right, to get the best out of Tipperick, you need a six who does a shed load of donkey work. And those kind of Pocock, Hooper, even kind of Warburton, Tipperick, double open side stuff, yes they've worked, but also you look at a player like Pocock, who was so good at doing the dirty work as well as getting over the top, that he could do that as well as anyone else. And I would argue Warburton likewise. You know, he's world-class open side at his best, but also he was probably a world-class blind side as well, because he tackles so damn hard and does all that grunt work that he could do it all for you as well. So yeah, I absolutely agree. Moriarty's a baffler, and you know, even out of the players in the squad, I don't know why. I don't know, maybe you're able to shed some light on this. Did Schunzer have a knock or something? Was there a reason why he wasn't considered for this game?
Yeah, he's injured.
Right, okay.
I'm not sure the severity of his injury. So that,
because he did the captain's run. He did the captain's run on. No, he did the captain's run on Friday. They didn't even pivot.
Technically down as injured.
Fine,
so
fair enough.
I don't think that's a valid criticism or fair criticism of Pivot.
Enough. But yeah, you know, when it comes back to it, that's you know, that these kind of big selection calls, obviously injured players aside, are.
But the props are as well, like you know, the two props on Rodri Jones and Sam Wainwright got annihilated in those two scrums, absolutely annihilated. That's poor selection. I mean, Rodri Jones, you know, I don't know why Rhys Carey wasn't in the squad. He's got flaws, but he should have been there. And Sam Wainwright's only played, he's hardly played any rugby for Saracens. He shouldn't have been put in that position. It's ludicrous. So the best Ospreys had one of the best scrums in the ORC last couple of seasons. Nicky Smith has been the best loose head in Wales, scrummaging wise. Like, although Gara Thomas was one of the fair, the only bright spots yesterday because he had the upper hand in the scrum. But Nicky Smith's been excellent in the scrum. He got dropped because he bought a dummy from Ardy Sevilla. Not the only one to bought a dummy from him. He's there for scrummaging. Why the hell wasn't he on the bench? Thomas Francis had a poor game against New Zealand, but he's by far Wales' best tight end. If he picked those two on the bench, it would have papered over cracks, but Wales would have won that game because it wouldn't have been annihilated in those scrums. It was just poor selection for me. Nicky Smith, I've always been baffled why he hasn't had more of a look in, because he's quite frankly better than some players getting selected ahead of him.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And you know, like you said before, selection is, because you have so little time with the players, selection is such a big part of what a head coach does at international level, that, you know, they are the decisions you get judged on, whether it's a game against Georgia or it's a semi-final of a Rugby World Cup. They're the ones that you get judged for. Right, let's take a look at this one as well. This one's from Carwin Jones. It says, if we were to move on the current coaching staff, who would you look at for head, attack, defence, forwards, backs, etc.? He's given us a couple of suggestions. Scott Robertson as head coach. Attack, he's not sure. Defence, Mark Jones or Kevin Sinfield. Adam Jones in the forwards. Anyone you'd like to see in the mix, Steph? You know, I think Robertson is probably the overwhelming person who'd be top of the wish list of most fans, wouldn't he?
Are we playing fantasy rugby? Or are we doing the realistic?
I think
if I was the Welsh Rugby Union, I wrote in the Telegraph yesterday, you know, if I was the Welsh Rugby Union, I'd be going to Scott Robertson. I'd be getting the biggest pay packet I could possibly get, going to Scott Robertson and saying, take us to the World Cup, 10-month contract or year contract, whatever it is, and then we see where we go from there. That'd be hard to turn down, wouldn't it? Taking a Tier 1 nation to the World Cup with some decent play. Obviously, you know, as I've said, maybe we haven't quite got the players to challenge for the World Cup, but, you know, you could get a team out of them, couldn't he? So I would try that. You look at Welsh coaches. I mean, Steve Tandy's done a phenomenal job of Scotland's defence. I mean, we're talking about, forget Sean Edwards, it's not happening. That's in the past. What's the point going back there? You know, it's done, it's dusted. And he signed a long-term contract. Pointless debate in that. But Steve Tandy, I'd look at that. I think, you know, Adam Jones, maybe, but just because he was a great player doesn't mean he was a great coach. Not sure. Jonathan Humphrey's probably done more than him. You know, obviously he'd coached Scotland. I'm not convinced. It's a difficult one. I think Danny Wilson, I've always liked as a forwards coach. I'd look at that. But I Tandy, somebody I'd like to see there somewhere. I think attack is an area we got to look to overhaul. You know, Ronan O'Gara is I think he's got a lot about him. What he did with La Rochelle, you know, the way they beat Leinster, he's always thinking outside the box tactically. He's absolutely spot on. He's somebody that I think is destined to coach at a test level, and I suppose the dream scenario would be a Robertson and O'Gara link up with Steve Tanti, defence coach, and I don't know, maybe we could go to the Southern Hemisphere for a forwards coach as well, but I really like that idea of Tandy, Robertson and O'Gara, but you know, that costs a lot of money as well, but so we'll see, but I certainly would be aiming high if I was a WIU, like they did, like Roger Lewis did when he went off to Gatland in 2007.
Yeah, while we're talking about Gatland, we have had this from a couple of people who've mentioned the possibility of bringing him in for a short term contract to get us through the World Cup. What would you make of that as an appointment?
I've heard worse ideas. Mm. I don't think Gatland's the long term answer. I think Wales needed to move. I think they were right. Well, obviously, it was his decision to leave anyway. But I think even if he hadn't, I think they would have been right to move on and try something new. But at the moment, given where we are back in the doldrums, I think I've heard worse ideas. I certainly wouldn't discount it. Would you want it? No idea. But it would be something I'd consider if I was a Welsh rugby union on an interim basis to take them to the World Cup and then start again afterwards with somebody fresh.
Yeah, and buy you time to find that right appointment, which just has to be right next time.
Yeah.
This one is from David Corrigan. Lots of talk about coaching staff, obviously, as we've just done there. Professional structure, we've definitely done that in the first half, and rightly so. But how much responsibility and blame should be shouldered by the players? It's a really good point, actually. And, you know, I think we're all in agreement that, you know, that the buck has to stop with the head coach. But the players on that pitch aren't immune from criticism.
No, absolutely. It's a good question because we always go after the head coach when in any sport, team sport, when the result doesn't go the way of the team you follow. And, you know, obviously the coach creates the tactics. He's the one who creates the environment, sets the tone and stuff. The man management skill, Pivak's actually been lauded for his man management skills in previous jobs. It's one of the things that people have always identified with him. You ask what his strengths are. Same with Stephen Jones. So obviously the buck stops the head coach, but they, you know, at the same time, they don't take the field. They don't miss tackles. They don't take wrong decisions under pressure, do they? So you know, I think the game plan's been lacking, obviously, and that's down to the head coach and his assistants. So that's the main thing. But certainly, I think, you know, it's team effort, isn't it? Rugby's a team game on and off the field. And I think, you can't pin everything on one part. That's where a lot of Welsh fans on social media again, it's all Pivak's fault. It's all Stephen Jones's fault. You know, it's not. It's a collective effort. Certainly a lot of players haven't been playing as well as they potentially could play. So, and you know, there was a lack of leadership on the field from players as well. Really, wasn't there?
I think you have to say that, actually, you know, in a side that has that level of, you know, that caliber of player in it, you've just got to get someone who's got to grab that game by the scruff of the neck and drag the side through. And, you know, it just did not seem to be there yesterday.
No, absolutely not. I totally agree. They were rudderless. And coach got to take some responsibility, but as I've you know, the British Lions, they've got on the field the 50 plus cap internationals against a tier two nation, you know, who haven't got the resources they've got, nor the quality of player on paper. So, yeah, certainly the players are probably, I've got to take just as much responsibility as Wayne Pivak, I think. But, you know, there's a lot of things as well going on behind the scenes, which, you know, if I was a player, I'd be borderline striking almost. You know, this situation, the regions can't sign any players. Scarlett's had dispensation for Sam Wainwright because it was cost neutral. But by and large, in terms of contracts for next season,
they can't contract players. I mean, obviously, you know, realistically, a lot of players know they're going to be in contract and whatnot, but that's not a healthy position to be in. It's not a healthy environment, is it? That WIU have created. You know, they'd be within their rights to strike or to you know, be a bit, concerned and not giving their all to a certain extent. But obviously, a lot of, you know, they are representing their country, and a lot of people spend a lot of money to watch them play and invest in the team. But, you know, the whole environment surrounding Welsh rugby is not great at the moment. You know, as I say, you've got the situation where the WIU and the four professional clubs are at loggerheads. Players have probably been, you know, they've been promised contracts and given some sort of form of assurances. But by and large, I mean, you know, that empty promises don't put food on the table, do they?
No.
So I think there are things that have to be considered as well, because they are human beings at the end of the day. And, you know, sure, if you had that situation in your work, or if I did, we wouldn't be performing to our best either. So there is that as well. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, as I said, they probably should take as much responsibility as the coach, really, for Saturday's awful result.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I'd agree with you there. This one... Let's take a break from Wales for a minute if we can. This one was from Daniel Minty, and it's a subject that we've spoken about before, Steph. It says, after the Nick Whitehead injury yesterday, is there a case for independent doctors making the call at international level for the HIA protocol?
I think it's a good question. I think, yes is the answer. I think we've got to be really careful. I mean, obviously, we're not medical professionals, yeah. We're not doctors, and sure, the Australian doctors did what they thought was best, and who are we? We're not medical professionals, and they are. So we got to take their word for it. But you know, I don't know if there's any ever much pressure coming from the coaches and stuff in such a high pressure game. But I think we got to give them, those doctors, a benefit of the doubt. I just all I know is, you know, I've gone on about this before. The single most important issue in rugby, we have got to. Anything that makes the game safer for players and limits the chances of serious head injuries or, you know, conditions that could affect them in later life because of rugby, like dementia, etc. You know, anything that can lower that risk, even if it's 1%, needs to be considered, because, as we've said, it's not just protecting the player. That has to be the number one thing, protecting health, but it's protecting the game as well, because... over the next few years, more and more people, sad, but it's inevitable, will come out, and players at a young age saying they've got dementia and other horrible conditions, and, you know, it'll be really high profile, and rightly so. And then, you know, parents won't want their kids playing rugby, and rightly so. So that this is the biggest threat facing rugby as a whole, and anything that can make the game safer and prevent that, even if it's just 1%, then, you know, has to be seriously considered. So I would be in favour of it, certainly.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Let's take a look ahead to next week then, if we must. As we mentioned there, obviously Nick White will be missing. I think Tupou's going to be missing for Australia as well. The game is played outside the window. I think I'm right in saying that. So there'll be some selection concerns for Wales within that as well. How do you see it playing out, Steph? Is this going to be a Wales side that come back hurting from this week and can go out and claim a victory, or is this a dangerous opposition that we're walking up against?
It's both, really. It's a dangerous opposition. I think apart from the Italy game, where you've got to give credit to Italy, they played really well, mind. And obviously, they made wholesale changes and got bitten on the arse for doing so. This Australia side hasn't got what it's deserved results-wise this season. They should have beaten New Zealand in that game. I'm not blaming the ref, by the way. I actually thought he got it right. But, you know, in that infamous or famous Bledsoe Cup game, whichever way you look at it, should have won that game. Should have beaten France. One lapse of concentration at the end cost them. Scored the best try of the season by an absolute country mile in that game. They should have won on the weekend against Ireland. In my way, they could well have won. They missed an opportunity. So they you know, they beat South Africa as well. So they are a team that's very dangerous. They're an inconsistent team, but I think when the parts come together, they could be a threat at the World Cup. In terms of this weekend, they deserve a win from their autumn campaign, and they'll be desperate to do so. But they are severely depleted with injuries. Normally, you would say that's an opportunity for Wales, but given that they've just lost to Georgia at home, you know, that's you know, debatable. So maybe it's not an opportunity. There's a lot of pressure on Pivac. I mean, Wales should react with anger. They should be passionate. You'd expect them to come out all guns blazing because, you know, they're going to be under pressure, albeit, you know, because of the Football World Cup, there isn't as much pressure because not as many people care at the moment. But they will be hurt, or they should be hurt with the criticism. And there are enough players to play, good players for them to play a lot better than they did. And given Australia depleted, they could scrape a win. But if they did so, it would just paper over the cracks. And that's the concern, isn't it, that they win. You want them to win. Of course, any win against Australia is a good win. But the concern is they win and then, you know, the WU think, oh, we're back on track. And then we're all fine again because they bounced back in South Africa, lost a series, but, you know, incredible performance in South Africa, historic first test win, albeit they play better than the first test where they lost. But, you know, so they have got form for bouncing back after awful defeats. So it wouldn't surprise me if Wales won. But you'd have to say that Australia, given the way they played this autumn, are rightly favourites. But I think it'll be a tight affair, but I'm going to go Australia. But I just feel that even if Wales win, the WA, you've still got to make these tough decisions. I think what happens next week is irrelevant to the decisions that they've got to make.
Yeah, so do I. And I think it's, you know, coupled with the Italy defeat, I don't think that it's acceptable for a nation. I know we've discussed the kind of the shortcomings of the structure and the finances, but I don't think it's acceptable to lose to Italy and Georgia in the same season. It's just not.
That's not because obviously the finances and stuff and the neglect of the regional game has brought us this stage, but they still should be beating those teams even with those things. So yeah, I agree with you.
And then just finally to finish, you know, by way of selection, what do you, obviously, as we said, there are a couple of, there will be players unavailable for Wales. What changes would you like to see made for the Australia game?
I think you've got, you know, Thomas France, so I said a poor game against New Zealand, but I think, you know, you need a set piece. So I think he's got to come back in. It's difficult. You're looking around, I mean, obviously, Rowland's out, so I think Alwyn Jones has got to come back, got to come in for his leadership, albeit, you know, he's not going to, you know, he's not the player he was, he's not going to be around for that much longer, so that's a backward step in many ways. But if you want to win this game, I think he's got to play. Farrell's got to come straight back in. I think you've got to keep Morgan at six, who did have a fine game.
Yeah, he did.
I think Anscombe's probably going to have to start at 10, although there's not much between him and Priestland, really. Centres are uninspiring, aren't they? But I think you probably, there's not much choice, really. You just got to stick with Watkin and North. Louis Rees-Amit's unavailable. Halfpenny will have to come in a full back.
Yeah.
And I think then you're going to, I would like to see, I would stick with Adams, who actually did play well yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been a great try, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would have been.
But I would have Adams, Halfpenny, and I think I'd go with former pick Rio Dyer. I mean, he's shown he can play at this level. He's been a bright spot, doesn't he? So that would be my... those would be the changes I'd make. And then on the bench, I think Nicky Smith's got to be ahead of Rodri Jones, I think. I think Ryan Elias's got to be there for his size. It's very difficult because there's so many injuries as well. But... there's not many changes you can make, really. Those are the ones I'd make, and I'd have Costello on the bench as well. Yeah, I think you can offer something a bit different.
Yeah, I know. I absolutely agree. I think that was a missed opportunity. Yes, I know it's a, you know, I know they're bigger fish to fry when it comes to selection and that result yesterday, but I think it was a big opportunity to hand Costello a start at test level and see what he's made of. You know, like you said, I don't think there's a great deal this season between Priestland and Anscombe. If I'm honest, I don't think either's filled me with much excitement in a red shirt. Obviously, Priestland had that superb game against who was that, against the Stormers, was it? Yeah, for Cardiff. Yeah. But I would have given Costello that chance and just go, right, well, you know, we're looking for players who've got more improvement to take them on to another level. And that's where I think this was an opportunity. This autumn campaign was a real opportunity to blood some players who might have a bit more in their locker. And I think Costello is one of them. So, you know, at the very least, he should be on the bench against Australia. But we will see. Steph, thank you for helping us muddle through it. Hopefully this has cheered everyone up on a wet and windy Monday morning after a loss to Georgia. That's something I never thought I'd say. And who knows? Yeah, maybe we'll turn this into a football podcast by the end of the week. It might just have come to that.
Cheer us up.
Yeah. So yeah. Fingers crossed. The football goes considerably better than this does. But yeah, Steph, thank you very much for joining us. Thank you to everyone for listening. Thanks as always to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. If you want to get some. Not only some coffee, but you can also get some Christmas gift sets in. If there is a coffee lover in your family, then head over to socoffeetrades.co.uk. And finally, if you haven't heard our special podcast from last week with Luke Upton about rugby's greatest mavericks, then make sure you head back and have a listen to that. And there's an opportunity to win a copy of the book as well by heading over to our Twitter page, if Twitter still exists by the time you read this. Right, thank you for listening. We'll be back next week.
Podcast Network.